Hello, this is The Money. I'm Richard Aidy. Today, we begin a series of four shows that are very different to what we normally do. Instead of picking a topic and pulling it apart, we're more or less going the other way. This is a more personal look at money, so how it shapes our lives and our relationships, the hang-ups we have about it, the psychological baggage we carry. Fittingly, the series is called Money, It's Personal, and it was originally played on Earshot. It began when the journalist Fenella Souter noticed that while we're surrounded by talk of stock markets and big business, it's rare for us to talk honestly about personal money and our feelings about it. So she went looking for people from all walks of life prepared to be candid about this taboo subject. Here's part one of her exploration, the piggy bank years.
I don't know why we have this secrecy about money. I just know it's culturally a very strong taboo, and it is harder to talk about money than it is to talk about sex.
With telling people how much you get paid off, I don't like disclosing that information.
The shyness about talking money in the Chinese community, we have no shyness at all. In fact, more or less, the first question they will ask you is how much you earn, how old are you, how much do you weigh? The way they judge a person is how much you earn.
I think poor means that you don't have much stuff and you don't have a bed and you don't have big houses and you live on the street.
Well, I'm not worth as much as that, but people like me never really know. It's considerable. That's about all that I'd ever say about it, and it's more than enough.
I think discussing financial matters like that of a personal nature is somewhat tacky. I just don't do it.
Like Philip Wallen, my own parents felt it was tacky to talk about money. For a long time, I didn't realise we were actually poorer than the neighbours. But was it really that social nicety that kept them silent? Or worry that their friends might know our true circumstances? Or was it about protecting us, the kids? Because as we'll explore in this series, money isn't just about dollars and cents. It's tied up with some powerful feelings. It can colour our childhoods, affect our friendships, make or break partnerships, reveal our personality. And while money might be everywhere, when it comes to being honest and upfront about our own, how much we have, how we really feel about it, well, we'd rather not. Over the next four programs, I'm going to break down that wall of secrecy and have the money conversation with some ordinary Australians. Tellingly, a lot of them didn't want to use their real names. We'll be talking about everything from the legacy of growing up poor to the drawbacks of great wealth. And yes, there are some. We'll also be looking at different cultures, who holds the purse strings in a relationship, and whether a spender and saver can live together. I'm Fenella Souter, and this is Money, It's Personal. Let's start with where our feelings about money are first shaped, way back in childhood, especially if you did it tough in those early years.
My name is Man Yi. I'm currently a yoga teacher. I'm over 50 years old. I originally from Hong Kong, now live in Australia. My dad was a compulsive gambler, which means even though, no matter how much he loved us, his compulsive behavior. So whenever he got salary, he took it from gambling. We always end up with mum not knowing where to find food. This is my childhood. We grew up with absolutely no money at all, which means mum and dad both need to work. More or less, you know, from the minute I was born, then my mum know that I can sleep on my own. And then they just have to work, because when you have no money, you have to do whatever you have to.
What do you remember about, you know, what you had as a child?
Nothing. Nothing. We had a bed that mum and dad and myself sleep in. I remember clearly we got a wardrobe next to us, have some clothes on, in, and something on top.
Mm. And what about food? Was there always something to eat?
That is what mum is good at. Always make sure food on the table. And food become, believe it or not, a big things to me. Because when I was young, when they were out working, I woke up in the middle of the night very scared. There's always a cupcake you caught by the table. That is my biggest comfort food. Sorry about my being emotional.
Determined not to repeat her parents' experiences, Manyi went on to become a successful businesswoman. Liz's childhood is also playing out in her adult life.
So I'm the sixth child of nine. Dad went to work, mum stayed home, raised the children. She was very frugal. It was more economical to make three dresses out of the same pattern and the same material. So the youngest child wore the same dress for about 10 years. It was just the way we all lived. I remember Dad went from a weekly wage to a monthly wage without any notice. So we had sausages and rice for a month. And that's just what you did. As I have aged or as I've matured, a lot of those influences are coming back. And I think, oh, that's what Mum used to do.
Do you feel uncomfortable spending money?
I don't feel uncomfortable spending money. I enjoy spending money. I think I work hard, but I don't spend money if it's going to be wasteful.
No, sort of lower middle class family, never that well off. My father initially worked in business with his father in a car yard.
If that voice is familiar, it's broadcaster Norman Swan recalling his childhood in Glasgow.
To show you how bad businessmen they were, he had a car, garage which serviced largely the Jewish community in the Gorbals and around that area. And my grandfather's name was Sam Swirsky, and this is the post-war years. And he called his business SS Motors. So that shows you just how attuned they were to the market.
And what happened from that? I mean, so...
They went bankrupt. When my father went bankrupt, we went through a very difficult period where, in fact, and it was on the grace and good favour of my grandparents who would bring in food, that we had food to eat. It was quite dramatic. We were living in this nice middle-class house, but inside was genteel poverty. And my father couldn't get work. And some other people in his family had changed their name to Swan to escape anti-Semitism. And he changed his name to Swan and the following week got a job. So the Swan part of my name dates from about the age of 10. From that age on, I was washing cars and doing other stuff, which I don't regret at all. So everything that I had to spend, I earned.
What do you think the effect of those childhood difficulties or those difficulties in your parents' financial lives, what was the long-term consequences for you?
Well, knowing the value of a dollar, in those days a pound, being absolutely sure I never wanted to be ever bankrupt. So I'm incredibly risk averse. Not to the extent that I don't take risks, but I'm very careful. And I can be up at 3 a.m. worrying about money, even though objectively I don't really have to worry about money, but I can be up at 3 a.m. working, and I frequently am.
Really? Why?
It's because I desperately do not want to be in that situation. I know how fragile it is, and I know how easily you can plummet to that situation, and having seen it, don't want it to be me.
Are there things that you don't like spending money on?
No, I'm a shopper. So there's a lot of contradictions in what I say. So, I quite like shopping and I quite like spending money. So I used to say, I run to eat and I work to spend. But so there's a lot of irrationality about my attitudes towards money. But my response to the 3 o'clock wakening is actually to work harder rather than necessarily to scrimp on the taxi fare or not have the new pair of shoes or not go out for dinner with friends.
But the same childhood circumstances can create very different attitudes to money. That's certainly true of Helen and her sister. I meet Helen in a bar.
My parents were amazing economisers. We lived on a single income family for every cent was accounted for. My parents were dedicated to saving. And what this meant for my sister and myself was there was no money for anything except the basics. Everything was homemade, and when you're a teenager, and it was the 60s, and it was a fashionable era, My stepmother made all our clothes. My father built all our furniture. You know, everything felt slightly shabby. We never had any money to go to the tuck shop. We never went to a restaurant. We had very basic holidays, if any. I seethed with resentment. I think I've really rejected what I see as a mean approach to accounting for every cent. It hasn't been disastrous. I perhaps would be in a better position if I had been a little bit more careful. On the other hand, my sister, her attitude was very similar to my parents. Again, on a fairly modest income, she accumulated a lot of money. And when she inherited money from our parents, she put it in the bank and admitted to me that she was just, you know, after all this economising, was unable to spend it. And it stayed in the bank, and very sadly, she died before she was able to spend any of it.
How much money do you think you've got?
I can't remember, but somewhere around 100. Well, I found a few $50 notes. No, yeah. I found a few $5 notes in the gutters.
When I was a little girl, my grandparents used to give me choice of birthday present. My grandmother offered a $10 note, while my grandfather tried to tempt me with a lottery ticket with a possible prize of $10,000. I always went for the instant gratification, the cash, and then promptly spent it. Nothing's changed. For Liz, it was important to teach her children the other lesson.
Yeah, I've got four children. For them to know about money was I felt that was part of my role as a parent, to teach them about money. And when they were little, they got money for a month. So I'm talking about eight. So they got $20. And they had to manage that money for a whole month. And I knew they wouldn't. They took their $20 and came back with bags of lollies. And then we'd be out shopping and they'd say, "Oh, Mum, can I have an ice cream?" I said, "Of course you can, darling." And they'd put their hand out for the money. And I'd say, Oh, you want me to pay? Oh, no, I'm not paying. You can have an ice cream, but I'm not paying." And they say, "Oh, I left my money at home." I said, "Well, that's just bad luck, because, you know, if I leave my money at home, I'll go and ask somebody for it." So those lessons were very important. And it took a couple of years for them to realise that if I spend it in the first week, I have to wait 3 weeks. And that was the purpose. They had to hurt. They needed to hurt.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day.
I wanna be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had. I wanna be on the cover of Forbes magazine. Smiling next to Oprah and the Queen.
Yeah, I would have a show like Oprah.
Money wasn't something I thought much about in my own youth. But for me, the Depression wasn't so far away that it ranked as ancient history. And I did know scrimping and saving wasn't the name of a band. It was a virtue. Now the messages are very mixed. Spend, spend, spend like there's no tomorrow. Work that plastic. But also start planning your mortgage and your super from the moment you're out of the cradle, practically. How do the current generation feel about money? Emily's a country girl, now living in the inner city and starting a career. She's also juggling debt.
My name's Emily. I'm 28. I work at a film production company. I grew up in a very low socioeconomic community. My family didn't have very much money, but they sent myself and my three siblings to boarding school in Sydney. So when I first got to boarding school, I distinctly remember the cars. My parents drove like a beat up van that had a window that was no longer a window. It was like chipboard that Dad had screwed in there. That was what we got dropped off to school in. And I just remember that, you know, lots of people had Mercedes and Audis and cars that I'd never even seen before. A lot of the other country girls were probably on a similar page. But for me, I remember thinking, wow, I'm poor. We're really poor, which we're not. But going to school in a place like that showed me that there was a lot more that you could have, and I definitely wanted to get it. I have a good job now. I make, you know, I've got a good salary. I'm terrible with my money. I've got credit card debt. I've had credit card debt since I was 19. It's not that much, really. I don't think it's between like 5 and 10 grand. I think it's pretty average amongst a lot of my friends. I would say everyone's got a credit card debt. There's like credit card debt is a new black.
Well, if your credit card, you can, there's a little machine where it has buttons on it, and you just put your credit card instead of just taking like $50 or $70. It's a lot easier because you don't actually have to pay any money.
I think a lot of people don't freak out about it because you can do the balance transfer. You know, like you transfer it to another bank and then you don't pay interest on it for 12 months, and then you transfer it to another bank and you don't pay interest on it for 24 months or whatever.
Mum opened a bank account for me at school.
And then I started work and I opened a savings account at the Commonwealth.
When I moved into the flat, I had a cheque account. Then I got married, we got a housing loan.
And when we decided we'd like a pool built, I saw the bank about a personal loan.
You and your bank. It's a lifetime thing.
I would say that my biggest splurge on my credit card is shopping online, basically. Yeah. I've got subscriptions to a lot of the sites that I like. So I get a newsletter in my inbox every day and I might have a look at that. But I'm trying to unsubscribe from those and delete those emails when they come into my inbox and just not look. If I actually had to go shopping with cash, I think I would probably spend less. Yeah, definitely. Actually, I would definitely spend less if I had to hand it over in cash, because it's like your little plastic card and you just tap it. You don't have to put your PIN in anymore. It's so removed. I have spent $500 on a pair of shoes in the past. Yes. Yes. Well, I didn't. The credit card did.
That hair. Those legs. That look. Those lips. L'Oréal Paris is ready to make the world shine because you're worth it.
I'm 100% a product of the instant gratification generation. If I see something I want, I pretty much buy it then and there. If I decide in 2 weeks I don't want it anymore, I go on to a Facebook group or somewhere online and I sell it. My cousin, we have this saying as well, we're poor but we don't look it, which is like, that's why we're poor. Anyway.
I have a credit card, yeah. I hardly use it. I don't use it at all, actually. So I like to walk into a shop. You know, you have a good time too. It relaxes you as well, shopping. I like shopping. I don't mind it, actually. I love buying clothes and watches and you know, things for your hair, believe it or not. I love buying milkshakes. I like milkshakes. That's what I like, you know, and I like to buy things for the home too, you know, whether it's like a nice picture or cushions or something like that. Like just last week I bought a $1,400 dining table, you know. I saw something, there was an opportunity, I grasped it, and now it looks very good in my home. It looks better than it did in the furniture shop.
That's Wahid, a student with a part-time job who lives in Sydney's West. I meet Wahib and two of his friends, young men in their 20s, all still living at home, in a local pizza bar. They order, I pay.
What do you guys want? What do they like? Sorry. Are they vegetarians because they work for the ABC or what?
Yeah, well, look, I love money, like I said, for a lot of things. It brings stability, that's the biggest one. I have my own property, actually, and the family lives with me. And hopefully I'll move on to buy my third one very soon. Hoping. I'd worked very, very hard and I saved money like it was the last thing on earth, pretty much. Family got into a bit of strife financially, so, you know, my mum got involved a bit in gambling for a little bit, which, you know, luckily she got over it. We helped her through it and that. There were times where I couldn't go with my friends because I had no money. There was a point where, especially when I was studying at UTS, I couldn't go to uni because I didn't have any money to buy a train ticket. I mean, it was that bad. Money problems do tear people apart, you know, it's a fact. So what I did was I left uni for a bit and I just started working. I worked multiple jobs. I was a security guard at one point. And then I met a few people and, you know, they gave me an opportunity. I started managing a bit of shops, learning how to run restaurants, just basically whatever I can get my hands on, I took. And I made the most of it, you know. And at the same time too, my parents were getting back on track as well. So 3-4 years later, we've got 2 places. We're going on to 3, hopefully, and maybe many more.
When I talk about buying, my partner says, yo, I'ma buy the White House and rent it out to the press, cause I'm rich as hell. My bitch as well, got clientele, because the records sell. Take champagne baths, girlies make me laugh. How they be petting and sweating just to get on my staff. Made the president a resident on Money Street. Since I'm money, money talk, so I don't have to speak. Wear designer clothes, max out in the road. Got a dog named Dollar with a mouth full of gold. My lifestyle seems fancy, all my fancy. The money man is grand, the clan enhanced me. Try to creep the cash, you better outrun. A solid gold silver bullet shoot.
You were talking with Wahib about his mentality about money. I never had any issues with money in my life. So there's been no financial problems in my life. I've been very privileged. Even if my parents had some financial problems, they would never tell me or they would never show it. I didn't know about my parents' background. They always told us, oh, when we had nothing to eat when we were in Chile, we would always be very poor. There was times when we had no clothes on our backs. But we didn't understand the significance of that because we didn't live it. So it was difficult for us to understand what they were saying, because they would tell us all these things, but they wouldn't show it to us. And obviously you wouldn't show a kid poverty. You wouldn't take things away from a kid. But I don't blame my parents because they try to give me the best life I could. But maybe if I've had a bit of, you know, a few issues in my life, or it would change my perspective and I would have saved money more than I could have. Because I've had the opportunity to save a lot of money, but I haven't. My name is Diego. I am a law student. I'm 22 years old.
My name is David. I am 22 years old and I am a market analyst. Well, I don't have that many frivolous sort of hobbies except my Fridays and my Saturdays, which I try to decompose after the long week of looking at numbers. So I go out. I go out to nightclubs, I go out to drinking in general, and in general it is very expensive, about $500 a night. And finding a lady in the club and trying to talk to her, obviously you want to buy her a drink, and then you want to get in good, you know, connections with the friends, so you buy all their friends drinks. And so I don't have a credit card. I will be damned if I do, because I don't trust myself.
Do you get any of these spending patterns from your parents?
My parents will be horrified if they were heard, seen my bank statement, let alone heard the things I spent money on. I don't think they'd even understand. I come from a Polish background full of Eastern European influence, so they'd be horrified, yeah.
Of course, there's a whole other area of expense when you're young, dating. What's it like for today's 20-somethings? Emily and the boys have different views about picking up the bill.
I would never expect to be paid for on a first date. I was paid for on my first date, that's just gone, but I would never expect it. I earn, you know, I work hard, I've got a wage, I'll pay half. That's how I see it, for sure.
Do you think that's a general attitude amongst other women, young women you know?
I think so, yeah. I think that most of us are like, you know, we don't expect to be paid for. I don't expect to be looked after. No one's coming to save me. That's how I think about it. I wish they were, but they're not.
Oh, well, girls, oh. All right, so it's just something I feel like a gentleman needs to do, you know. Pay for the girl when you go out. I remember the last girlfriend I had, I paid for dinner and the movies and whatever it is we do on that night, you know. I'd make sure it's within my budget, you know, or within my means. I wouldn't go to, say, a restaurant that's $300 a head just to impress a girl. I'd take her out, maybe say Pancakes on the Rocks or the Hard Rock Cafe. You know, you can look a bit of Elvis on the walls and things like that, you know. But I wouldn't overdo it.
If I take a girl out, I usually tend to buy the drinks. I believe geographically, I think the women from Western suburbs expect you to pay, and they will fight you for it, despite it's digging out of our monthly pay. Well, you go out with a girl from North Sydney, and it's entirely different. A woman from North Sydney will split the bill. It will do everything normal. Evenly. But a girl from here, it's a bit more tough. Yeah.
My girlfriend's very generous with her money with me, and she likes to take me out to eat and all that sort of thing. But in my defence, showing true gentleman styles, when we first started dating, I took it upon myself to shout her most of the things when we first started, not dating, but when we went out together. I used to buy her drinks, I used to buy her food. It changed very shortly after, mainly because my girlfriend sees herself as an empowered woman, and it would be a cop-out to her if I started spending my money on her. It's not fair to her, so she can...
In the next program, we'll be looking at money and couples. There's a lot of emotion around household finances and some big questions to be settled. Who's going to earn the money? Who manages it? And can a saver and a spender live happily ever after?
You know, when you're young and you're attracted to somebody and you fall in love, really the last thing you think about is how much money they earn. Well, I didn't think about that. But when you go, you know, you start having kids and you start getting a mortgage and you start having to figure out who works and who doesn't, and then it starts to become much more of an issue.
That was Fenella Suter with part one of Money, It's Personal. It's a cracking series. It gets into things we don't normally go near. If you haven't heard it before, stay with us over the next few weeks. If you have, listen again. There's some surprises you've forgotten. If you've got something to say about it, get in touch via the Money's homepage at abc.net.au/rn. The series is co-produced with Kathy Gollan, the sound engineer's Mark Don, and I'm Richard Addy.